This podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network.
This is Sean from the Gunblog Variety Cast. Unlike Bob, I was in the military, but that was a long time ago. Now what I need is a practical podcast from a practical guy. That's why I listen to Bob Main's Handgun World podcast on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World podcast, a practical show done by a practical, everyday guy without a military or a law enforcement background or a gunsmithing background or anything like that. I just try to keep this rooted in a lot of common sense, folks. So for episode 411... most of you know that last weekend I went to the Range Master Tactical Conference in Little Rock, Arkansas, put on by Tom Givens of Range Master. What a terrific event. You know, it's a gathering of a lot of top-notch instructors in the industry. It's a great gathering. It's a mixture of lecture and shooting classes, and some of the biggest names were there, and some of the biggest successes in the firearms instructing industry. I took classes from Marty Hayes, Masad Ayoub, Andrew Branca, Chuck Haggard, Spencer Keepers, Carl Wren, and maybe I'm leaving out one or two that I went to. Awesome stuff. Oh, William April, I went to part of his class, should have stayed for the whole thing, didn't, mistake, bad on my part. So anyway, and plus I took shooting classes, I took a pocket pistol class taught by Chuck Haggard, and I took the appendix carry class taught by Spencer Keepers, and of course I shot the match. It was just a really, really good conference, a great way. It helped me increase my ability as an instructor, helped me increase my skills, gave me some more knowledge. Ladies and gentlemen, knowledge is power. It's as simple as that. Knowledge is power. And you just can't beat getting good knowledge from good instructors like the people that were there. So while we were driving home from the tactical conference, we recorded a podcast. I traveled there with Ben Branham and John Adine. We drove up there 9.5 hours, and we drove back 9.5 hours. And what you're about to hear, I was going to release as the last episode in the Range Master series that I'm doing. But I'm going to put this one first because it's a review of the conference as the three of us saw it. And we talk about the different classes that we took, because some of us took classes that the other one didn't take, and that worked out real well too. So the next two episodes are going to be what we recorded on the way to the tactical conference in anticipation of the conference. But we also talked about some really cool subjects, like how fast do you have to make hits, how good do your hits have to be, and we also talked about, you know, various other things regarding concealed carry, as the three of us saw it. But this week, enjoy this episode, or enjoy this interview coming up here in just about a minute. You're going to hear some background noise because we were in our car and we were driving, but I did the best I could to keep as much background noise out of it. So remember that when you listen to it. I do want to mention that this show is sponsored by Concealment Solutions, makers of some of the finest holsters out there. Jason Christensen does a great job right now. Today, I'm using one of his Cobra outside the waistband holsters that I really like. Check them out at concealmentsolutions.com. They are an official sponsor of the Handgun World podcast. Just a quick break, and you'll be able to hear our 38 or 39 minute conversation during the drive home from Little Rock, Arkansas, back to San Antonio after the tactical conference.
Uh, A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, so back in the mobile studio here, and we are headed home from the tactical conference. Ben Branham's back with me. Ben, how you doing?
We're having fun.
Road trip. And the captain today is Dr. Dean. What's up?
Actually, the commander, because I was in the Navy.
Oh, the commander, because he was in the Navy.
I wasn't the captain. I was a lieutenant commander, actually.
But officers didn't drive the boat. Somebody else did.
Yeah.
Officers told the guy to drive the boat.
That's true.
That way.
Exactly right.
But today, John's driving the boat.
Yeah, John's driving the boat, so we got to make sure that we keep him happy.
I just got to stay between the buoys.
There we go. And you're doing a good job. See, you're in the middle lane. So you're between the buoys, aren't you?
Yep, absolutely right.
He's been driving for a couple hundred miles. He hasn't hit anything yet, so we're...
I came close a couple times, though.
Yeah, only once.
That must be when I was taking a nap, huh?
It was only once. No big deal.
All right, so I wanted to bring you guys back on to talk and to kind of do a recap and a review, kind of a debrief of the Rangemaster Tactical Conference in Little Rock. And what I thought would be pretty cool, it was actually your idea, and I'm going to borrow it. Thank you very much. The three of us took some different classes that the others didn't take. So I figured we would focus on those and let's talk about them. Let's give the listeners an education of what went on. Ben, why don't you start? Because I think you took a class, didn't you? I think you took a class John and I didn't take, right?
Probably. I don't remember which one.
Elephants. The elephants
class. Oh, I did the bombing class.
Yeah. All right, so talk about the terrorist bombing class with Greg Elephant.
And I say
Elephants.
I say the bombing class, yes, the terrorist bombing class. And I got to tell you, if you ever get a chance, take it from Elephants. He's up on all of the newest stuff out there. I've been taking those classes for years, but I kind of, after 09, I fell off of that terrorism world and I didn't play there anymore. So I haven't taken a real class. It's just been, but you kind of keep up with things because it's always been my interest. And he's up on all the latest bombings and stuff. And his whole point of the, I think it was 3-hour lecture, was he kept asking, are you afraid yet? Are you scared yet? Because he had all the numbers and everything. And then all of us in the firearms world think, well, terrorist bad guy, right? If you shoot him in the vest, you might set off the vest. But if I shoot him in the head, I'm good to go, right? Well, you know, if he's in range, you're in range. Typical bomb vest is 20 to 25 pounds. You have a kill radius of about 25 meters. So how many of you can do a headshot outside of 25 meters? And they say the kill radius, that's where you're better than at 25 meters. If you're farther than 25 meters from him, or right at 25 meters really, you have a 50-50 chance of dying or not. So that blast radius, when you talk about that kill radius, blast radius, if you're on that number at 25 meters, you have a 50-50 chance whether you're going to survive or not. So how far can you make a headshot? Are you scared yet of terrorist bombers?
Ah.
Yeah, and he went way deep into the woods. So all of us that think we're going to take a headshot and take out the terrorist, yeah, that would be awesome. But you know what? If there's a bomber in there and you're not smart enough to get out, or you can't get out fast enough, your chances of being dead are, well, they're pretty high. So remember, if you follow that, what you think is a terrorist bomber in there, because you're going to save the day, you're probably going to end up dead.
Did he, Ben, did he talk in that class at all about terrorist active shooters with a gun?
Oh, yeah. He went through that stuff. The numbers are pretty stinking high. And I forget, he gave the percentages of how many active shooters use a bomb as part of their plan. And it's got to be everyone that you could think of right now had a bombing component to it. Adam Lanza, the monster that went to Newtown to kill everybody, he booby-trapped his apartment with bombs. The Columbine kids that went in, their original thought was they were going to put a bomb in the cafeteria, have it blow up, and they were going to sit outside with their rifles and kill all the kids as they came out. The bomb didn't go off, so they went in, and then what happened happened. So all of these things that you can think of generally have some kind of bombing component where the kids or the active shooter has thought about it. The guy that...
The guy's in California.
Yeah, they were throwing pipe bombs.
Yeah.
Aurora, the guy actually... He set a booby trap to try to get his apartment to explode so that all the officers and everything would go there across town so he could have free reign of the movie theater. Well, it's kind of funny, through happenstance of more than one thing, none of the bombs went off, and the bomb didn't go off in his apartment. But it took him something like 2 days to dismantle all the booby traps and make it safe so they could go in there and actually investigate his apartment. So all of these things have a bombing component. So, yeah, he kept coming back. Are you scared yet?
Yeah.
So if you start shooting at an active killer, and he's probably, if he has a bag, you can probably bet more than even odds that in the bag is more guns and bombs. So are you scared yet? He kept saying that, and it was just like, I've always been scared of bombs. I like to play with them and make them blow up when I can make them safe, and I get to put them away over there and then watch them go off when other people are trying to use them as a weapon. Yeah, I get scared. I don't want to play with them.
I think we all should be scared.
So that
and I think that even those of us that carry a gun every day probably are not as scared as we should be.
Not of bombs, but we just need to have this knowledge and these stuff so that if you think you're going to go in there and save the day, which is awesome. If you're going to be super duper hero and you're going to go in and shoot the guy to keep him from, he's got a bomb vest on. You saw the bomb vest. You know he's a bomber, and he's trying to go into a crowded kids theater or something where there's tons of kids, and you're going to go in there. Just know that you're probably going to give your life to save all those other lives.
Yeah.
And that's awful heroic. But we just need to have that knowledge as self-defense people about all of the things that are going on so that we can make an informed decision of whether we're going to do it or not. If he's going in for a bunch of kids, yes, I'm going to go in and I'm going to take my chances, you know. There's an old joke that I played a long time ago when I was on an interview. I'm going to hide behind a car, shoot him in the head, and hope for the best. Yeah, you're sometimes you're just to that point. But understand that if you go up against a suicide bomber and you're going to shoot him, chances are probably better than even that you're not going to walk out. So as long as you know that stuff, it's cool. Go for it. Please. If it's my kid, please help my kid, because I can't be there all the time.
Right.
And I'll do the same for you. I'll help your kid when you can't be there. But just know what you're actually getting into. Don't have this perfect image in your mind that you're going to run in and say, freeze, get on the ground. And he's going to go, ha ha, I'll Akbar. And you're going to shoot him in the head and everything is good.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen that way.
And you know what I want people to know is this whole tactical conference, there was a lot of the instructors, they spent a lot of time talking about reality, what's really going on in the world. I know you guys took Dr. William April's class too. And that's a real reality check, isn't it?
That was a gut check again. I haven't dealt with those people since 2009. And he calls them violent criminal actors. I just tell them it's the true evil people out there that are so broken that psychiatrists can't even... They really can't figure out what's wrong with them and put them in there. And he went through the whole spiel and all their childhood and stuff. And you kind of feel bad for them until they're out there, you know, just putting a crowbar through somebody's head just to see what it looks like. And you're just kind of like, I've got a name for that, and that's just evil incarnated. And it's just, it's out there. And I met a bunch of those people overseas when I worked overseas, and I saw true evil in people. And it was kind of nice to get that little warm and fuzzy that, oh, they're way over there, and I don't have to deal with them anymore because I live in America. And there is Mr. William April, actually he's a doctor, standing there going, yeah, you know, I've been interviewing these people across America, and here's what this evil person said, and here's what this evil person did and told me about it. And, oh, yeah, here's this little evil kid that put a pencil through my arm because he thought it was moving around too much, and he wanted to stop it from moving. But really, the kid was in there because he had stabbed his brother in the eye and killed him with a pencil. So yeah. You think he has a problem with stabbing people? Yeah, so evil it just, it's there. And how do you tell a kid is evil? You know, I don't remember the age of that kid, but he said he was a kid.
Like 7 or 8, I think.
It just, you know, just evil is out there. So, you know, that was a gut check going, oh, yeah, people are the same everywhere.
Yeah,
they're evil over there. They're evil over here.
They're the same everywhere. So, Dr. John, you took a class that I think you want to talk about as well, don't you?
Yeah, I took the, from Chuck Haggard, I took the pepper spray class.
Pepper spray, okay.
Right, and basically what he says, it's kind of an intermediate use of force. It's not deadly force, and there's been studies that have shown that pepper spray will not kill you. Some of the previous stuff did. You know, it had respiratory effects where you go into bronchospasm. But actually, this pepper spray is a bronchodilator, so you're not going to go into bronchospasm. It's just a really bad irritant. So first thing is that he stressed that it is a safe alternative to deadly force. And then he talked about, you know, how you employ it. There are different kinds of spray nozzles. And so that for indoor use, you don't want to use a fogger because it's going to get everybody in the whole room. You want the stream or the gel. He went through the history of how these were developed and, you know, how they're actually measuring the amount of kind of the Hounsfield units or whatever the heck it's called. Hounsfield units are for CAT scans. Sorry about that. But, the Schofield units. And there was not a lot of, early on, a lot of testing and quality control. Now things are getting a little bit better. And he recommended using the Sabre products because those were probably the best ones on the market. And then we actually did an outdoor demo, and he was showing how some of the products worked. The other thing is, for instance, if you do have one that has a fog component to it or, you know, a mist, that if somebody's following you and you go down an alley, you just leave a cloud of that stuff behind you, and that that will often discourage the bad guy from continuing to follow you. Which I thought was
interesting.
Which is a very nice way of not being directly, you know, aggressive against the person who may or may not be a problem. But and you can just say, oh, yeah, I was fiddling with it, and I accidentally left some spray behind. Sorry, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought of that.
I haven't either.
That's a really big jerk move, and I like it.
Yeah, no, it's effective. That's the thing.
Because who was going to continue to go through the fog mist after they get pepper sprayed and get a little bit on them? And I can tell you, a little bit is enough from dealing with that stuff. I've been full-on sprayed. I've been cross-contaminated, and I've been partially contaminated. Partially contaminated is they spray it into a cup, and they take a Q-tip, and you get to put it in your eye with a Q-tip.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, no, it sucks. You're not going to want to do anything besides get that stuff off of your face. So if you sprayed it, that's a really good tactic.
Right.
I'm going to start teaching that. I got to figure that one out.
Yeah, that's a good one. And the other thing is, of course, they make inert modules that don't have pepper spray in it, so you can practice learning how to use the actual device and see how the spray actually works. It's exactly the same except for it doesn't have the pepper spray in it. It's got the carriers. And he talked about the different carriers being alcohol and water and things like that. And talked about different temperatures using this stuff. So I think it was very, you know, valuable as far as knowing what you need to buy and how you need to deploy it. And they make ones that are big enough that you can put on a keychain and just stick it in your pocket. And carry it in your pocket. And I think that's probably the place to do it.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, because the holsters don't work. And, you know, some of the earlier things, the things broke. You know, there's nothing worse than pulling your pepper spray out and the trigger breaks off in your hand. And now you've got a can of whoop-ass that doesn't do anything.
it was worse in the early days. Ask the cop that would climb in and out of his vehicle or something. Would break the top off and it would dump the whole can inside the vehicle with you in it.
Yeah,
that it does get worse than that.
Yeah, it's bad.
But the stuff's getting better and better.
But I think that if you think about it, you know, as far as if you're going to be carrying weapons, it's another tool to keep in your tool chest. That, for instance, we talked about that episode when I was coming out of the Walgreens with a fistful of money, and this guy made a beeline for me, and I got behind my car door and told him to back off. But if that guy didn't back off, wouldn't it have been nice to have some pepper spray in my hand and just hose him down? I think that probably would have discouraged him, and it's not deadly force.
Or it would have been even more fun to use your little trick as he's walking behind you, just go,
Yeah.
If leave a little fog for him to walk through.
Yeah, it's just a little message, going, you know.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
That's right. So again, you know, I mean,
yeah, we talk about that too, because it's, you know, I don't carry any intermediate weapons on purpose. I'm going to kill you or run away like a little girl. And given the choice, I'm going to run away like a little girl every single time. And I'm going to try to back off and use all those tactics and everything. But really, I carry a gun and not much else as a weapon. So I have run away like a little girl or deadly force. And going hand-to-hand is, yes, it's always an option. But no, it's not something I want to do because...
It's a bad option.
I'm carrying a gun.
Yeah.
I brought a gun to a fist fight, and now I made it worse. Turned what could have been a barroom brawl into a lethal encounter. So... Yeah, I run away like a little girl all the time. I've got no problem with that.
So, John, you feel
it works.
You feel like your takeaway on that, well, your major takeaway on that class was what?
I think that pepper spray is an option. That's a less than lethal force option. And for me, I'm going to get one that's a narrow spray because there's a good chance that if I have to use it, it's going to be in an enclosed space. So you want to have a narrow spray. You don't want to have the fog. Or I may have a fog wind in my car.
So you can actually buy one and start carrying it?
Yeah.
Well, there's a good endorsement of the class right there.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's worth doing. And, you know, Claude Werner, you know, the tactical professor, he pulled his keys out of his pocket. What did he have on there?
Pepper spray.
He had pepper spray on it. So, again, an endorsement by somebody like that. He's been thinking about this stuff for a long time. Even though he carries a revolver, which is okay. But, you know, he's been thinking about this stuff for a long, long, long time.
And did they recommend any specific brands and types?
Well, I think the Sabre, I think, is what he felt.
Oh, yeah,
was
that's
the
right.
Best,
you said the Sabre.
Was the best brand. So.
And that's what most cops get issued.
And don't buy the stuff that's hanging on the thing at the Quickie Mart, okay? the little, you know, the one that, you know, little pocket chain one that's got about a half ounce of stuff in there.
Yeah.
You want something that has several doses. And he says it's okay to do a test fire when you first get it just to make sure it operates.
Yeah.
Read the directions. All those cans will tell you, go out and test fire it, make sure it works. They'll tell you on the can, it says how to test fire it, but generally it's a well-ventilated area and spray a tree or something.
And don't spray into the wind.
Ben, what are directions? What are those things?
Yeah, we don't read those on our guns, do we?
No, I think I'm allergic to directions.
Yeah, we're manly men. We don't read directions. Well, when you're using it as a weapon, you should know everything you can about it.
I'm just
and
kidding.
One of the things you can do is read the directions. Yes, I got an M&P pistol, and I went through the armorer's course. I still read the manual on the stupid thing. Why? Because it's my weapon that I carry every day. It would be nice to know everything I can about it. Is there a little quirk that's in the manual that I don't know about? Is there something weird that I should know about that this gun is different than the Glock I was carrying for the last 5 years before that? So it's always nice just to flip through the manual. Most of it's BS, you know. Don't point the gun at anything you don't want to shoot. All the stuff you already know. You know, this is the trigger, and this is how you pull the trigger. Yeah, most of it's, I say straight up for you guys listening to this episode, most of it's crap and worthless knowledge that you already have and just boring. But go through it. Flip through it. See if there's something you don't know in there. I bet you guys have been carrying Glocks for years. If you went flip through the Glock owner manual, I bet you'll find something you didn't know in there.
Yeah, like how to take the magazine apart and clean it. I bet you nobody's ever cleaned their magazine out. How many of you people have cleaned your magazines?
I actually have, but few people do.
That's right.
I have never cleaned a Glock magazine, and I've yet to have one fail. So,
I'm just telling you, it's in the manual. It tells you how to take it apart and clean it, how to take the floor plate off.
I didn't know it told you how to do that.
Yep.
See, look, I learned something I didn't even have to read the
manual.
And
it's not that difficult to do.
It's not that hard. No, as long as you have the Glock tool, you just put it through the hole, just lever it.
The hardest part of cleaning a Glock magazine is getting the base plate off.
Getting the base plate off.
Yeah. That's the hardest part of the whole thing. All right, so I went to the appendix carry class taught by Spencer Keepers. Keeper's Concealment, and I've got to say, not only was it a good instruction of appendix carry, and I'll get into that in a minute, but it was also one of the best pieces of instruction, firearms instruction, that I have seen in many years. He does a fantastic job. He's an excellent trainer. If you get a chance to take a class with Spencer Keepers, whether you appendix carry or not, he does teach some other just general handgun related courses. I would highly recommend him.
He's out of where?
He's out of Oklahoma City.
Okay.
He's got a class coming up in Dallas. You and I are both thinking about taking it.
Yeah, he's got a class in mid-April coming up in Dallas, and when I find more information about that, I'll try to put it in the show notes. So my big takeaways from that class is, first of all, anybody can appendix carry if they want to. And it doesn't matter what size you are. It doesn't matter what your build is. I want to try to say this nicely as I possibly can, but Mr. Keepers is not a small guy. He's a big guy, and he's got some round parts to him, if you know what I mean.
He's built like I am.
Yeah.
So actually the class, I went up because I was out of the other class. I walked up to see what your guy is doing. I had a little bit of time, and when I saw that he was a bigger guy, I was thinking he was going to be this flat-chested, flat belly, six-pack kind of guy.
He's exactly the opposite.
And he's exactly the opposite. I walked up, and I was like, dude, I'm built like you.
Right.
I'm a fat guy. How do I do this?
Right. So if that's you.
And what did he tell you?
He gave me some cool points. So he said, hey, wear your belt up as high as you can.
Right.
You can stand all the time. You're going to want a longer gun, as long a gun as you can.
Right.
And then with my holster, you're going to want the wedge and adjust the holster up and play with it until. And then he makes those holsters, which are pretty cool because they're so adjustable, so you can get the right spot.
And
he only had 30 seconds to talk to me. Actually, after I went, I talked to him about it, I was like, maybe I'll just go buy one of his holsters. I went over to the back of his truck, and he didn't have one for my gun. I was very upset, but I'll probably end up buying one anyways. So, yeah, I always want to try the appendix thing. I'm not sure I'm sold on the whole you got to carry appendix thing, but, you know, we're working on it. And that's one of the things I did learn on the jiu-jitsu class. We all took just enough jitsu, which was really just an escape from somebody knocking you down to get him into position, and the only finishing you have is to draw your weapon and shoot the guy once you get a control on him. Well, you know, he said it was impossible for you to do it from behind the hip. This is why. And he showed us how to do it from the appendix position, how to draw, how to clear, how to make sure you don't shoot yourself as much as you can with a blue gun and not actually doing it, and how you can shoot your opponent while he's still on top of you. Well, that's awesome. I teach you can do it behind the hip. If anybody's been to our advanced class, I teach you how to do it. And so I stuck the gun behind my hip and my holster, sucked the blue gun in there, and went back to my training partner rolling around on the ground. As soon as I got that position of advantage, all I had to do was cock my hip a little bit, get behind the hip, grab the gun, thrust it out there just like he said with the appendix, and it worked fine. My training partner goes, did you put that gun behind your hip? You didn't put it in appendix like you said? I was like, well, that's where I carry my gun every day, is behind my hip. I don't carry an appendix.
Yeah.
So if I have to use this technique, training appendix isn't going to help me at all because there's no gun there most of the time.
Yeah.
And it worked just as easy. And then my training partner tried it because he carried behind the hip too, and he didn't have any problem behind the hip either.
Yeah.
So you gotta train all this stuff.
Yeah, you gotta train them all. And one of the things that's a good thing Spencer did was he did a good job of pointing out two things, teaching two things about appendix carry. Number one is the advantages of it. There are some advantages, there are some disadvantages. Yes, you can draw from behind the hip when you're in almost any position, but sometimes when you're laying flat on the ground and somebody's on top of you, it's just a tad bit easier. And from appendix, he also demonstrated, like, for example, if you are in a crowded area, if there are people shoulder to shoulder next to you.
He did that seating example,
and I noticed, for me, that's when the light came on for me. You know, we would sit down, and there were two big people. It's kind of like when you sit on an airplane, and you got the middle seat, which I often get, and the people on both sides of me are giant people. And so I have, you know, I have 11 inches of room in the middle seat, all right? Not that I'm going to be drawing my gun on an airplane because I can't take it on there, but we demonstrated that to make a point, and that is, from appendix position, it's pretty easy and quick to access my gun in that situation. But
I saw that demo, and I watched you guys train it, and I was really impressed by that. I was like, huh. And it gets me thinking more and more, maybe there is something to this appendix. If you can have two gorillas leaning on you shoulder to shoulder and still get your gun out without any difficulty, there's something to that. Because if I have a gorilla leaning to my left and a gorilla leaning to my right, and I've got to get my gun behind my hip while I'm sitting there, I have got to get my elbow out, create some space so I can get around to get my gun.
Well,
appendix,
yeah.
He didn't have to. He just straight up, straight out, and straight to the target. And the gorillas can lean on you all you want, and you still got your gun out and into the fight.
That's exactly right, Ben. And thanks for adding that in there. And the other thing is, there are times where you don't want to make it obvious that you're drawing a gun. And you don't become as obvious when you're drawing from appendix as you sometimes are obvious when you're drawing from behind your hip. So he talked about that.
See, that one I would argue a little
bit. Like when people are behind you? For example, when people are behind you, it's kind of hard to see somebody. It's not impossible, but it's harder to see somebody access their gun when they're drawing from appendix.
If somebody's behind you and concealed, you'll see the gun. If somebody's drawing appendix, you're not going to see the gun. But to a trained person, where do bad guys carry guns? Always in their waistband. More often than not, they carry an appendix.
Right.
So a bad guy knows what that mission, he knows what that draw stroke looks like because that's what he does. Cops know what that is because that's what bad guys do, and they know what bad guys do. So I don't think that that's as big an advantage as people that love the appendix report it to be. But still, there's just that little thing with those gorillas leaning on you and can still access your gun.
It's called
like
accessibility,
that.
Mainly.
And the other thing is something to think about. Yeah.
But if you're sitting, say, at a table at a restaurant, you can stealthily get that gun out because the table is hiding your
hands.
Yeah,
if the table was hiding your movement and you had your hands under the table, that would be a lot less because you don't have to shrug your shoulders and move your hips to get behind the hip when you're sitting down to get the
gun. Exactly,
yeah. So that one would make it way better. So
and it makes accessibility easier.
The way he teaches you how to carry it, sitting seems like it would be, from the seated position, that it's definitely easier to access your gun than when it's behind your hip and you're sitting.
And speaking of sitting, he teaches a real good technique that after you draw your gun, again, your appendix carrying, when you draw your gun, he teaches a good part of the draw stroke on how to get that gun up into your line of sight and be able to present your gun towards the bad guy. And even if you have like a table in front of you or something like that, he taught a very good technique on how not to bang your muzzle on the edge of the table and things like that and still be quick and on target. I thought that was a very good technique that he taught. And above all, the best thing that he did was he taught how safe appendix carry can be, because the big knock on appendix carry is that a lot of people say, oh, it's so radically unsafe, it's terrible. You know, you're going to shoot your privates off, or you're going to send a round through your femoral artery, and nobody should ever be doing it because it's so unsafe. And Spencer busted a lot of those myths.
He
used a CERT pistol,
yes. I was going to say, part of it is actually his holster design, because it's so adjustable. You put those wedges in there, move that foam around, you make the holster a different shape. He actually tells you, your gun should not be covering your femoral artery or your man parts when you're sitting, standing, moving at all, even when the gun is holstered. We always think it's unsafe because when I put the gun in the holster and I sit down, it's covering all sorts of stuff I don't want to be shot.
And that's not true.
But if you use his equipment like he teaches, that's not true, because even if the gun discharged in the holster, it may hurt because you're going to get some muzzle blast there, and you know that's next to my family jewels, and that's going to ring your chimes, but it's not going to take any chunks of meat off. It's just going to go into the floor or into the seat you're sitting on. So that was one of the things I took away just watching. I only watched his class for like 10 minutes. That's why I was like, I need to go take his 8-hour class and see what this is all about. Because just seeing that you adjust the holster so the stupid thing never points at you.
Right.
Why didn't I think about that? That's genius.
Well, and in addition to his holster design, he also is very good at teaching how to draw and how to reholster from appendix carry so that you're not covering your femoral artery. You're not pointing it at any time at your femoral artery. And the way he demonstrated that is he used a CERT pistol. And the CERT pistol's got that cool laser that shows you exactly at every second where the muzzle is pointed. And he demonstrates with the CERT pistol how not to accidentally shoot yourself in the wrong area when you're reholstering from appendix carry. You also have to kind of shift your hips out a little bit when you reholster, and that keeps the muzzle from also pointing in towards your body. So those were some real good teaching. Matter of fact, he demonstrated behind the hip carry, and with the CERT pistol, he showed exactly how easy it is to point that gun on parts of your body you don't want, even from behind the hip, and the laser from the CERT pistol was showing it.
I think he's going a little overboard on that because it's a training issue, just like holstering the gun appendix.
Yeah.
If I don't train myself correctly, of course if I'm sitting down and I go to holster my gun and I sweep my legs, that's a training issue. That was a stupid you. That's not an indicative problem of the system. That's a issue with you. But that's the same as having your flagging yourself when you're carrying appendix and you're carrying the holster in the wrong spot so it's pointed at your femoral artery all the time when it's holstered.
You're right. It's a training issue. You're exactly correct, Ben. And that's the thing is that You know, a lot of people automatically say, oh, well, you know, for the untrained person, you know, behind the hip carry is safer. Well, the key is that's kind of an oxymoron when you say that, because when you say an untrained person is usually not very safe anyway. And so it doesn't matter where they're carrying the gun. It could be, you know, if they're untrained, they're untrained and likely to be unsafe.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the nose. I haven't heard it say it an oxymoron, but that's a perfect term for it.
Yeah, you got to be careful. You got to be careful when you say, well, for the untrained person, this is good. Well, it's definitely an oxymoron. If they're untrained, nothing's going to save them from themselves.
Yeah, but you know what's good for an untrained person? Training. Get trained. Get some practice. And it doesn't take much, because I spent there 10 minutes with keepers, and I learned, I mean, if I go back and practice and stuff, I can get it by myself, and it just doesn't take that long. And yeah. I don't understand why people won't get out there and do some practice and get some training, and it takes a lot less time than you think it does.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the learning curve. Basically, why should you have to make all the mistakes that Spencer Keeper already learned how to solve the problem for? Take advantage of the guy's knowledge and his experience, and cut out all that learning curve crap and all that risk that you would have to go through. Learn from somebody. You know what they say? A dumb man learns from his own mistakes. A smart man learns from other people's mistakes.
Very good.
You need to learn from other people's mistakes.
Very good.
So that you don't have to repeat them yourself. You don't have to put in the investment in time, effort, money, and, you know, potentially potential risk.
That's very good, John.
How about the ones you learn the hard way, when people accidentally shoot themselves and die?
Exactly. I mean, and guess what? They don't learn from their mistake, did they? They didn't have a chance to learn from their mistake because they paid the price.
And you don't want to make that mistake.
No.
And go, oops.
No. And so, you know, spending some money on a class from somebody who knows what the heck they're doing may actually save your life.
Yeah, it may. Definitely. And the final thing I want to say about that class is it was packed. There was probably 35 people at the very least in that class. It speaks to the growing popularity of appendix carry. It's becoming extremely popular, and it can be done. It can be done safely. It can be done effectively, and you do have to have the right equipment. The proper holster and the proper belt for appendix carry are vitally important. I can't stress that strong enough. There are holsters on the market specifically designed for that method of carry. Spencer Keepers are good. Raven Concealment makes some good ones. Dark Angel makes some good ones. So make sure that you invest in the proper holster for that, and also the proper belt. Just any really good gun belt will pretty much get you what you need. So guys, final thoughts, not just on the classes we discussed, but final thoughts on the tactical conference overall.
Well, when I first saw the schedule, I'm thinking to myself, this is a smorgasbord, and there's just way too much food on the table.
Buffet.
It's a buffet. It's more than, it's a giant. You know, so I think you have to look at the what's offered and plan it out in advance, and, you know, just shoot for what you want to do. You want to have some finite goals. I mean, for me, number one was William April. I wanted to make sure that I spent those 4 hours with him, because, you know, and talking with Paul Carlson, he says, you need to go listen to William April. And you know what? That was some of the best advice that I got, because that 4 hours contained so much valuable information. It was a paradigm shift as far as the way you think about bad guys. Bad guys are not like us. They don't think like us. You know, it's kind of the jungle, you know, rules of the jungle. Okay, if you piss them off the wrong way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to make sense to me why he's shooting at me. He's going to shoot at me because it made sense to him. In his world, you know, we are ants, and they don't mind stomping on us. They don't mind beating on us. You know, he gave the example of, I'm talking to the one guy, he goes, look, I'm the only person here. The rest of you people are cows. Okay? And that, you know, you're not human like me. You're just an animal. And if I need to stomp on you, I'm going to stomp on you. And that's the way they think about us. We're not like them. They have no empathy. They have no ability to understand how we feel. It's only their world. And so you have to be ruthless if you're going to fight these people. You cannot be... you can't live in your nice person world. Okay?
And you think you do, and you don't interact with these people, except for you do. There's the one story of the guy that shot a guy on the street corner for almost no reason. So they're driving along. His buddy in the car flips off somebody and screams at him on the side of the road and some obscenity. So he stops the car 5 feet down the road, gets out, goes back to the guy he flipped off, and shoots him in the head, gets back in the car, and drives off. Well, he's interviewed. Why'd you shoot him? Oh, it was self-defense. Because in his world, sooner or later, that person that was flipped off is going to come back to take retribution against them.
Yeah.
So he's just being the precursor in his self-defense because that guy's going to come back and kill him anyways.
A preemptive attack.
Basically. And it was you standing on the street corner. This guy drives by, flips you off, and then he gets out and pulls a gun and tries to kill you. And you're like, what happened? What did I do? Where was I? And this was just at some random intersection in middle America with some random person that had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, the guy was disrespecting the other guy's girlfriend. So what he was doing.
These guys, you never know what's going to happen. You could be standing there, and some car drives by and flips you off and screams at you, and you're like, oh, well, that was stupid. And then the guy stops and gets out, and he's coming over to kill you. What did you do? Nothing. What do you need to do? You better freaking defend yourself, because that guy's going to kill you.
Yep, that's exactly right. And you're hosed if you have no method of defending yourself.
Right. So, in other words, you have to look at these guys out there as not... You can't use your moral values to evaluate what they're going to do. They have their own set of morality, and they think that they're doing the right thing. Based on their paradigm, they are. Okay? Because they're defending their honor. They're doing whatever it is they're doing. Because it's the rule of the jungle there, and if they don't stand up, they get squashed. These people were abused as children. They were forced to do things that... either be victimized or to victimize other people, and eventually they chose, I'm going to victimize other people so I don't get victimized. That's where they're coming from. And so you have to understand the psychology of all this stuff. This is really an important thing to grasp, and this is what Ben was talking about with evil people. They're evil because they've been made that way, and they've been put in a situation where the only logical thing from where they're standing is to victimize other people so that they're not going to be victimized.
Exactly. My final thoughts on the tactical conference is, if you've never gone to the tactical conference, you better sign up now. Sign up for next year's conference. Do it now. It sells out early. You will not regret it. There's very few places where you can go and you can have dozens and dozens of experts in our field, in the firearms and in the psychology of bad guys in this industry.
And self-defense stuff.
It's very in self-defense stuff and everything else. Very few places where you can find all these teachers in the same spot over a 3-day period. I thought that's cool.
Yeah, if you get the opportunity, definitely go. We're planning to go back next year. We're not sure if we're going to drive or fly, but I like driving because we're having fun as long as we have the time. Maybe we'll ask somebody else to go too and we'll make it a full-on party. But yeah, go. There's 3 or 4 courses I didn't get to take that I wanted to take.
Me too.
So I'll probably go back next year and take them. And I'm going to be nice here and plug Paul Carlson's, one of his events that he helps promote. It's called Polypalooza. And it's in remembrance of a police officer that died up in Ohio. But it's the same thing. It's a big conference where you can walk around and take different classes in 2- and 4-hour blocks.
It's in August.
And it's in, is it in August?
Yeah, in Garrettsville, Ohio.
Yeah, so it's at Paul's home range. So if you need to go to the Safety Solutions Academy, and you can get that one. That'll be the next one coming up. And then the following year, TACCON will be again. And I kind of like calling it TACCON. It sounds like one of those video game conferences just for real stuff.
Yeah, video game. All right, thanks for listening, folks. John and Ben, thanks.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a 6-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow, reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre. But that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, there you have it. There's the Tactical Conference as seen by me and Ben Branham and Dr. John Adine. By the way, remember Dr. John Adine's website, Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, drgo.us. They are always looking for medical professionals, any medical professional, to join their organization to promote gun rights in the medical community, which that's a big challenge. You've heard Dr. Adine on other podcasts and also on this show talk about that. And of course, Ben Branham of Modern Self-Protection, he and I do a lot of instruction together. You'll be able to see a lot of our classes that we teach together coming up this year. Let me talk a little bit about that. In late June, we're going to be in the Illinois-Wisconsin area, right near the border. There's still some spots left for next month in Dallas towards the end of April. We are filling up, but there are some spots left for the Dallas class, April 29th and 30th. These are all Beyond Concealed Carry enhanced two-day classes. Enrollments have begun for Utah, May 19th and 20th. That's a Friday and Saturday in Utah, Beyond Concealed Carry enhanced. These are all two-day classes. Some of these early bird specials are starting to come to an end. Matter of fact, the early bird special for Dallas is over. But you can still get a chance to get in on the early bird special for the Utah class. We also have enrollments that have begun for our Ohio class in Ohio in Garrettsville, Ohio. And that's where we're teaming up with Paul Carlson from Safety Solutions Academy. So you're going to have three instructors. You guys are going to have a real treat for that one. You're going to have me and Ben Branham and Paul Carlson, August 12th and 13th, 2017. And then, of course, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast is our host. And that is August 26th and 27th. By the way, Gary Doherty is our host for the Illinois and Wisconsin class in June. All those classes, you can see them at handgunworld.com. Full class descriptions and everything. An announcement to everybody who is in the Shooters Club. We just revamped our site. Kind of made the site a lot easier and nicer for you to use. So we think it's a great improvement. Thank you for being patient. There was about a week there where access to the site was a little hard to get, but you now have good access. So to all Shooters Club members, you've been sent an email to your PayPal address. Remember, check your PayPal email, and there are instructions there on how to set up your own unique login, so you don't have to worry about trying to remember what the last password was and stuff like that anymore. That's how we've improved it. If you have any questions, shoot me an email, but check your PayPal email address. Thanks for supporting me on my Amazon store. If you don't want to become a member of the Shooters Club or can't take a class, we understand that. If you want to support the Handgun World podcast, my Amazon store is a great way to do that. Whenever you're going to make a purchase on Amazon, just do it through my link, please, my associate link. And if you just click the Amazon store page at handgunworld.com, you'll see how to do that. Just please take advantage of that, and that'll help support me. And you won't have to spend any extra money to do that. Let's see. What else do I want to talk about? I think that pretty much sums it up. Remember, folks, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. And, you know, the anti-gunners think that the evil's in the holster. It's not. They don't want to admit that it's in the hearts of men and women. And I saw Paul Carlson at the Tactical Conference, and I went up to him again, and I said, Paul, thank you very much. Thank you very much for saying this at the class that he attended and where he watched Ben and I teach about a year ago up in Ohio. And he said he got that from somebody else. So, but anyway, I'm borrowing the phrase from Paul Carlson. Evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. I just think that is... it's so true. And if you went to the tactical conference and you went to William April's class, you'll definitely know that that's true. It is evil, and that's where it rests in the hearts of men and women, and pretty much nowhere else. So, folks, till next week. Next week, by the way, you're going to hear some more conversation that the three of us did on the drive to Little Rock on the way to the TAT conference. And there's a couple of real good subjects coming up. And that's all I'll say. You'll have to tune in next week to hear all that. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Oh, would you also remember to rate this podcast on iTunes? Rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Any way that you listen to this podcast, if there's a way to write a review or issue a rating, would you please do that? That really helps people out when they're searching for a good podcast to listen to. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Against the wall, it's up to me and no one.